Blog Talk Radio.
Number 347-857-3293. And this evening we're going to let our co-host sort of lead the way. A number of our co-hosts have concerns and issues that they would like to share with you. All mics are open at this time, and so we're going to turn it over to our brother Ralph Pointer. And as we introduce each one of our co-hosts, we will announce the theme, or we will allow them to announce the theme that they will be sharing with you this evening. And after each co-host's presentation, the different panelists will respond if they feel it necessary or have a question. So, without further ado, I want to give you our general, our philosopher, our metaphysical philosopher, if you will, Ralph Pointer, with our creed.
Thank you so much, Betty, and brothers and sisters. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our laborers for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. And the lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. Because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. And now, brothers and sisters, I'm going to get right to what is being discussed today in the media, the corporate media, and that is the death of Supreme Court Justice Scalia. And for me, I hear outrageous things. Because I say to you, Justice Scalia is to the Supreme Court as Strom Thurmond was to Congress. And you remember all of the wonderful things that were said about Strom Thurmond. And now we have all of the wonderful things being said about Scalia. And that fits right in with our subject, our ongoing discussion of black people committing suicide slowly, gradually, and white America committing suicide gradually. And when I think of comparing Scalia to Strom Thurmond, I jump right away and follow this to Eisenhower, who said, beware of the prison industrial complex. Now, we can no more call President Eisenhower a communist than we can call one of the front runners on the Democratic Party a socialist. It doesn't work. We could get into that discussion, and we will have it, you know, like for the next couple of weeks. No, no, no. But how, back to the issue, what is the connection between Strom Thurmond and Dwight Eisenhower? Well, the prison industrial complex was forwarded by Strom Thurmond. And how did Strom Thurmond get so powerful that he was the head of a committee that funded the military? It was because he was a racist who got elected every time and served a long time in Congress, and he got a position in Congress that is the funding of our military, and he gave the military everything they went. And so from racist, it was able to help force militarism or help bring about the defense, support of militarism in America. Who would have made that connection 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago? And here we are. And we have Scalia, and one of the things I say about the civil rights movement is Scalia did everything he could to slow it down, stop it, turn intellectualism on its head. And if you want some turning of intellectualism on its head, you hear some foolish statements. Listen to the way congressmen are talking about why President Obama shouldn't appoint a Supreme Court justice. It is just outrageous. Now, I don't want anyone to confuse that my statement for my support of President Obama. I did not vote for President Obama either time he ran. And we will get into that, and his record will show exactly what he did or what he didn't do, and we don't have to debate that. But we're going to go on, we're going to continue tonight, and as I say, be careful, don't get me started. You almost got me started there by not interrupting or not saying anything, because these issues are a part of a cloth. They are threads of a cloth, and we have to examine every one of them. And so I say to you, just listen to what they talk about Scalia. Just remember how they eulogize the liberals, and all of those would-be leftists talked about Strom Thurmond. I didn't know who they were talking about. And he had to listen very carefully because he did not exemplify any of the attributes they gave to him. And so we are at this date. We're going to talk about several things. One of the things we're going to talk about is activism. How political acts are not done by political people. It's the 30th anniversary of the Larry Davis self-defense. And whatever you say about Larry Davis, he was more human than most people of color on the planet because he understood his right to self-defense. And if you talk about anybody's talking about their history, their lineage, you can't find anybody except black people, people of color, who don't talk about their heroes. We hear about the Irish struggle. Everybody who fought against England was a hero. You hear about the various American struggles. Everybody who fought was a hero. We hear of the Italian Americans talk about how their ancestors fought against fascism. But yet when it comes to people of color, we allow our heroes and sheroes to languish in prisons without so much as a thank you, ma'am. And then we continue to allow the media to decide who our leaders are. I hear that Hillary Clinton and all of the people are running to talk to Al Sharpton, who could not get elected in any black community that I know of. He couldn't get elected as dog catcher. As a matter of fact, in many of our communities, he was tried as a traitor. But the media appoints Al Sharpton as our leader, and we go for it. But without ado, like I say, be careful not to get me started. Be careful to allow me to go on without interruption. And so I'm going to go on to Larry Pinckney. And Larry, are you there? Larry? I see
yes,
you
brother,
on the board.
I'm here.
All
can
right.
You hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Are you going to, of the Black Writers, Activist Writers Guild, does the two-party system work for the people? Take it from there, will you, Larry?
Thank you. That's exactly the theme that I want to deal with right now. You know what? All I have to say about Scalia is goodbye and good riddance. Now, let's get to the two-party dictatorship, because that's what it is. The Democrats and Republicans have the people of this country, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people of this country, under a dictatorship, the two-party dictatorship. I want to refer people to the Black Activist Writers Guild. I sent Wait a minute. Before I say anything, I want to convey my love to you, Brother Ralph, my love and strength to you, to Sister Betty Davis, and, of course, to our warrior, our people's lawyer, our warrior always, Lynn Stewart. Now, having said that, I'm sorry I didn't say that first and foremost. Let me get back on topic here. The two-party dictatorship. We got the Democrats and the Republicans, and it's called one word, a plantation. I repeat, a plantation, a plantation, a plantation, okay? It is a plantation. We have Hillary the Butcher Clinton running around talking about she represents democracy. Hillary the Butcher Clinton, the same person who said, "We came, we saw, he died." And who was she talking about? She was talking about the head of state, or the former head of state, Muammar Gaddafi, of the then sovereign state of Libya, North Africa, okay? And what happened to him? Let me tell you what happened to him. Thank you to Hillary Clinton. Thank you to Barack Obama. Thank you to all the lackeys who supported what they did. They bombed that sovereign nation to smithereens. And what happened to the head of state? Whether you like him, dislike him, or know nothing about him, what happened to him? I'll tell you what happened to him. He was tortured. He was sodomized, and he was murdered. And Hillary, the butcherous Clinton, said, "We came, we saw, and he died." Okay? And then, of course, you had Madeleine Albright. Y'all remember Madeleine Albright? The one
yep.
who said it didn't matter that hundreds of thousands, at least 150,000, if not more, Iraqi children died? Oh, well. Hey, that's the price you pay for democracy. No, that's not democracy. It's hypocrisy and she recently, I believe it was last week, endorsed Hillary the Butcher, the Butcherist Clinton. So, now let's jump over to the Republicans, which is not a jump at all because they're basically one and the same. Even Roger Stone says that the Democrat and Republican parties are one and the same. They are controlled by the military-industrial complex. They are controlled and infested with Wall Street, okay? And y'all might be going, well, yeah, that's what's happening in 2016. No. Let's go back a little bit. Let's go back, oh, maybe 40 or 50 years to what W.E.B. Du Bois said, huh? In fact, it's over 50 years ago when W.E.B. Du Bois said, and I quote, "The two parties have combined against us to nullify our power by a, quote, gentleman's, unquote, agreement of non-recognition. No matter how we vote," I repeat, "no matter how we vote." All right? Then he goes on to say, this is W.E.B. Du Bois. Du Bois goes on to say, "May God write us down as asses." Asses. Yes, that's what he said. Asses. "If ever again we are found putting our trust in either Republican or the Democratic Party," end of quote. That was W.E.B. Du Bois. And by the way, you can find the article that I quoted W.E.B. Du Bois on at Black Activist Writers Guild. The article is entitled, quote, "Hatred, Division, and Perpetual Wars. When will we ever learn?" Again, the article is entitled, "Hatred, Division, and Perpetual Wars. When will we ever learn?" It's on the Black Activist Writers Guild site. All right? That's, you know, www.blackactivistwg.org. All right. Now, having said that, the bottom line is that all of us, black, white, brown, red, and yellow, but in particular black people, had better wake the heck up and understand that what we are dealing with is genocide. Genocide. Psychological and physical genocide. That's what Mr. Obama is all about. He's about both psychological and physical genocide. More people have been incarcerated under Obama, especially black people, but all people across the board, since Obama has been president for almost 8 years. How did that happen with Mr. Hope and Change, Joe Man? Okay? It didn't just happen by osmosis. This was by plan. Now we have Hillary the Butcherist Clinton running around talking about she doesn't even know what being a part of the establishment means. She doesn't know what being a part of the establishment means. She is the establishment. Come on, people. Wake up. Wake up, black, white, brown, red, yellow. Wake up, my sisters and brothers. Wake up, my brothers and sisters. So the two-party dictatorship, the Democrats and the Republicans, that's what they represent. They are nothing more than different sides of the same, the absolute same coin. It is time for us to understand that our loyalty must be to ourselves, to our political prisoners, whether it is Leonard Peltier, whether it is Seth Hayes, whether it is Mumia Abdul-Jamal, and hundreds of others, and I mean languishing in the prison gulag throughout this nation. All right? So I'm going to end this. I get a little passionate. I get a little carried away. But I want people to understand that we are in serious trouble, and we have to reverse what's happening. The revolution is not what Bernie Sanders said. The revolution started many, many, many decades ago. The revolution is an ongoing struggle, all right? The revolution is about what we, everyday ordinary people who are striving to survive, all right, and are trying to simply change our horrific circumstances that we're dealing with, the corporate plutocracy, all right? We don't have democracy in this country, brothers and sisters. We have hypocrisy and plutocracy in this country. The two-party dictatorship. Don't talk to me about the Democrats or Republicans. They're one and the same. Talk to me about liberation. Liberation. Talk to me about our political prisoners, many of whom who have been in for decades and decades and decades, and that's what I mean. I meant to say exactly what I said. We're talking about well over 40 years. All right?
And I'm saying to you,
thank you, brother, and I'm going to end it right there. All power to the people. Love you all.
And I thank you for that, and we must remember that when Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton talked to the people, so-called people, there was no one there to say, free our political prisoners. Betty?
On that note, we will take it over to the next speaker. Please remember, people, we want everybody to have time to get in, get their comments in, and we have at least five people in the queue who want to hold forth on some of their favorite topics. Sister Ann Lamb, are you in the house? If you are, your mic is open. Sister Ann Lamb.
I am in the house. All right, a couple of things. I just wanted to report, a little report back of today's events. We'll have to say that those pro-cop types are really cowards because they were nowhere to be found. It was amazing. You went over to the NFL headquarters for this anti-Beyonce, anti-political prisoner, anti-Black Panther rally. There was a whole bunch of empty pens. There was a few cops sitting inside a van. They did come out. We totally outnumbered them, which was very nice. We did as we said we were going to do. We met up at St. Patrick's at 1 o'clock. It's raining quite hard. I'm still wet. Yes.
Anne, maybe you better give some background on this. I don't think everybody knows what you're talking
about. Oh, well, this was all about because after the halftime show at the Super Bowl, right, this bunch of, it's actually the National Association of Police Officers, got very upset with Beyonce. They wrote a letter to the commissioner of the NFL in which they cited by name Wesley Cook, also known as Mumia Abu-Jamal, Joanne Chesimard, also known as Asada Shakur, and H-Rap Brown, also known as Imam Jamil Alameen, as people who were being glorified by this halftime show act. So they decided that they were going to have an anti-Beyonce, anti-Black Panther Party, anti-political prisoner rally today in New York at NFL headquarters, which is on 51st Street and Park Avenue, from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. So there were various counter-demonstrations being called. We actually all met and combined, which was wonderful. We made one nice big counter-demo. And we met up at St. Patrick's Cathedral at 51st and 5th at 1. We were there a little early. Most of us were there a little early. And we had a good little group there. And then a whole bunch of young folk wearing Black Lives Matter T-shirts joined up with us. And also the young women who had come out to support Beyonce were also there. So we all marched over the two blocks down 51st Street over to Park, willing and ready to have a confrontation. But we did not have one because the cowards knew that there were going to be people out there protesting against them, and so they decided not to show up. I think the rain might have had something to do with it, but to see absolutely nobody in these two giant pens in front of the NFL headquarters was pretty amazing. I think that tactic of us like buying tickets so they knew that there were people who were buying tickets who were not them probably helped. So in a way, they sort of like canceled or minimized it because they didn't know who was going to be who and who was going to show up and who might have a ticket. So I think that actually worked well. They did not actually cancel the event, but they obviously did not show up for the event. Rolling Stone already put something out about it. So at one point there was one white guy who tried to say
something. And do you think it's a possibility that the this is exactly what we're talking about, that the police, they're very big and bad, and they like to throw their weight around?
Yes.
But then when somebody says, oh, no, we're going to defend that position, the position of armed struggle, the we're going to tell you that these are our heroes, they back down because they're basically cowards.
Absolutely. Cowards and bullies. You know, they're bullies and cowards. So, obviously, yes, that was part of it, and that was very good. So we felt, you know, that we had achieved our goal. And
may I interject at this moment to say, remind everybody, this was a victory. This was a show of support of the people, of those who defended us. But let us remember, we are still in a police state.
Yes.
And the police are able to fire our teachers through the Democratic Party.
Yep.
And I want somebody in the Democratic Party to challenge that statement.
Or
they
the Republican
fire
Party.
Our good teachers through the Democratic Party. And I'm going to let it go with that and continue, Anne. And I'm going
okay.
to...
Okay. Also, this Saturday coming up, we have a very important event that's being organized by our friends at Anarchus Black Cross. Our brother Mark Cook, who is a former Black Panther, member of the George Jackson Brigade, and political prisoner, who spent 24 years in prison, which did not break his spirit or commitment to Black liberation. He's as active an organizer now as ever. So this will definitely be an event worth traveling for. He's only speaking on two dates while on the East Coast. So he's going to be on Saturday at 7 p.m. at the base, which is 1302 Myrtle Avenue in Brooklyn. It's like just over the bridge on the M train. It's not very far. And this should be a very interesting event. It's a free event. And this will be a chance for us to hear Mark Cook, who is an amazing human being. And so I think people should definitely turn out for that.
And I hate to keep interrupting you, but when you say it's not very far, it is way out in Bushwick. I mean, you get on Myrtle Avenue and you go and you go and you go.
Oh, for those who live in Brooklyn, it's far. Okay.
For those who live in Brooklyn or those who live in Manhattan, it certainly is too. But I'm saying it would certainly be worth the trip. Because
it'll be
Mark
worth the trip
is,
regardless of how long it takes us to get there. Yes, for sure.
Absolutely. He is his reminiscence
show
of his
up.
Own.
Go ahead.
Do show
ahead, Lynn.
To listen to Mark Clark, it will make you angry.
Cook,
it'll
Cook,
make
Cook,
you
Cook,
fierce.
Cook,
it will make you cry.
Mark Cook.
Mark Cook, not Clark. Cook.
Mark Cook. Excuse me, Mark. He has a wonderful presentation. But with that, I'm going to. If you have nothing else,
I do have a couple of little things. I'll be short. Everybody knows who listens to this program, we have a bunch of political prisoners going up for parole here in New York State this year. Okay? So if people would take the time, it's a very minor thing, to go to jerichoNY.org and scroll down that left-hand side, and you'll see links for different political prisoners going to the parole board. Herman Bell is going in March. Jaleel Muntakim, Robert Sapes are going in June. Maliki Shakur Lateen is going in April, and Abdul Majid is going for the first time, pending. So that's been delayed for a while because he had an Article 78 that was pending. That has not been resolved yet. Yes.
And can I interject? I thought that Maliki Shakur was going February 29th. The letters had to be in by.
Well, I heard he was going in April. Maybe I have that wrong. Let me see. I was up on his website. I thought they said April. They might want them by the end of February, you know.
Well,
they might
okay.
be going in the beginning of April, and they have to get them together ahead of time, you know, to submit them into the
board.
So
okay,
letters should be mailed on
up.
Or before
but,
February 29th. Yes, but he should be going to the board in April. Yeah, his upcoming parole hearing is in April. He still has and Article 78 over his 2014 parole denial, which will be decided on March 11th. So if it was actually decided in his favor, he would not have to go to the board in April. But that is, you know, a very long chance that that would happen. Anyway, we do have up all these links, and we would love people to go. And if you want to write a letter, there's talking points for people to write letters. There's sample letters. This is all more for people who know them or have corresponded with them or have visited them or are family members who have been impacted by them in some way in their lives. And then for those of us who don't know them, there's the petitions, which can always be signed, and they always go in because we have to counteract, once again, the PBA and their ilk, who with one, you know, click of a mouse, you can sign letters against parole for every single person that they consider a cop killer in the state of New York. Doesn't matter if you actually killed a cop or not. You could have just been the getaway driver. As far as they're concerned, you're a cop killer. So
they get signatures. If you go to the Jericho website, if you go to the ABC Anarchist Black Cross,
exactly.
We have all of our political organizations are sending letters. And so we have to stay in touch with our support because, as Lynn said to me today, what are we doing about our political prisoners? But with that said, this is a political program, political prisoner program. We have to get on to Tom Syracuse of the Manhattan Green Party. Tom,
sure,
are you
very
there?
Very important. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ann.
Yeah. Yes, I'm here, and I extend my greetings to you, Ralph, and to Betty, and to Lynn, and to all of the participants on this program. You know, we're not going to get any place unless we realize that government, and I don't care what country you're talking about, but government is nothing more than a tool of the ruling class. This business about whether we should vote for Hillary or Bernie or any of the other candidates, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, as if they, once they assume office, have the power to do what they want, is a total misconception of what government is all about. They do not have the power. They are mere stooges of the people that really run this country. And who are those people? They are the multi-billionaires that fund both political parties and that control the wealth of this country through their banks, their financial houses, and their big corporations. And this is the way it was at the founding of this country. Larry mentioned the word plutocracy. That's another myth that people have to get over, that this country is a democracy, or that somehow it was more democratic and we're losing our democracy. All of these are myths, and unless we analyze our system here in terms of class, in terms of who really owns everything, in terms of who controls the money, we're going to fall victim to all of these stooges and phonies that are running for office in this country. Now, don't you think it's rather sad? You were talking about Thurman what's his name, Strom Thurmond, South Carolina.
Yes.
And this guy was one of the biggest racists ever. And now we see the spectacle of the Democratic primary coming up in South Carolina, in which Hillary Clinton is way ahead in the polls among Democrats in South Carolina, because the Democratic Party in South Carolina has many black members. Now, what I would like to know, what is the hold that the Clintons have on so many black people?
Well,
what
I will
did
start
the black
with the hold
what did the Clintons huh? What did the Clintons ever do for black people? Why are blacks so enamored of Hillary Clinton or of her husband? I'm not saying that they should support Bernie Sanders. Here is a guy who calls himself a socialist and is calling for a political revolution. How the hell can you have a political revolution and you are running in the primaries of a party that is controlled by the ruling elite? This is total contradictions. People fall for this because they do not understand what this country is all about, what government is all about, and who really runs this country. And this is true among black people and among white people. It is true among the working class, whatever their color is, because they have fallen for all of these myths. Now, I understand that from the time that we entered kindergarten and went to school and went to the movies and watched TV, we've been inundated with all of this crap. And this, unfortunately, does have an effect on people. But just let's wake up, everybody. Let's just see what these phony politicians have ever done to improve our standard of living. It is the people themselves who struggle that forced any changes that we do have in this country. And so I'll just end here by saying that unless we understand this, unless we realize what government really is, nothing more than the instrument of the ruling class, we will continually fall for all of these phony politicians, whether they be black or white. You know, a two-party system is particularly advantageous to a small ruling class because they can always say that there is competition and that there is a difference between the Democrats and the Republicans, and this proves that we have a democracy. But
we must remember, Tom, that one of the things that we must remember, that the country began as a business. Hudson Bay Trading Company, the Virginia Trading Company, the East India Trading Company, it was to make money. And to make money, when it was necessary to kill the indigenous people, they slaughtered millions. And to make money, when it was advantageous to have slaves, they had millions of slavery. It is about money, and the money class run the country. and we have to change that. So thank you for that, Tom, and we're going to move on. You are finished. Are you finished, Tom? Hello?
Yes?
Tom, are you finished?
Yes. Just
move
one
on
more
to
thought.
Sister.
One more thought about the so-called difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. Actually, I really think that the Democrats are even more dangerous than the Republicans, because what they are, in essence, is a wolf in sheep's clothing. Glenn Ford of the Black Agenda put it succinctly, that if the Democrats are not the lesser of the two evils, they are the more effective of the two evils. And I'll just end on that note.
Well, thank you so much for that, Tom. And I will also add to that, we talk about James Baldwin. What James Baldwin had said, there is no lesser evil. Evil is evil, and we must fight it. And without so much ado, Lynn Stewart, are you there to give us your thoughts on what's happening this week?
I am. Are you able to hear me, Ralph? Mic check?
Loud and clear.
Okay, good.
Loud and clear.
I'm happy. That's the new device that I have in my ears, and I feel like one of my own grandchildren. But I do want to say, and I'm going to be very quick if I can, because I'm anxious to hear some of the other folks who you have on the agenda tonight. And I just want to say that there are a couple of things. I want to recommend a book, Lumpin', by Ed Mead, a true revolutionary who lived most of his life in the jails, but who has some real insights. It's a wonderful book, and it's readable, which is important. I also want to alert people to Michael Moore's new movie, What Country Do We Invade Next? He has pneumonia. He has not been able to publicize it. I understand it's a terrific movie, and it has a lot of issues that we want to hear about, such as prisons. So I think that it behooves us to get out there and take everybody we know who likes movies and likes Michael Moore to this one. He said he thought this movie could affect the election. Well, you know me, Ralph. I'm not much for elections, but if it can affect the way people think about elections, that makes me happy. And then last but not least, and this is I'm going to end with this, when I purchased a book recently, I also picked up a copy of a book of poetry by Pamela Sneed entitled Imagine Being More Afraid of Freedom Than Slavery. I thought that that was such a remarkable insight, because fear is what dominates, and fear is what motivates people. And for her to understand, she's a young Black lesbian woman, and she understands that fear is what is keeping everybody back. I want to read her poem called Eye on the Prize. Shrouded in this circle of flames is Emmett Till's face, bloated, beaten, burning in my mind every time I climb the stairs to my house, sit in my kitchen, talk on my phone. I hear you asking me, why am I so angry when I see little white ladies in little white dresses baking bread in brick ovens while little white children play hopscotch outside white picket fences? And I see Emmett Till's body floating on a river, mutilated so badly his mother could not say who he was. Bars split through him for whistling at a white woman, his swollen face protruding from that horrible picture. He was 14 years old. Do you hear me? And I see white families celebrating. No proof that 14 years old and Black means any white man can kill you for sport. And I hear white laughter gurgling from courtrooms when they say, you're free to kill niggas wherever you like. Do you hear me? You are free. Thank you, Ralph. Wake up time. As you say in your credo, it's time for us to wake up.
Well, thank you so much for that, Lynn. So hang in there. We're going to have, one of the things I like to remind everyone, before Joel comes on with his pearls of wisdom, that there was a black man involved in the killing, as you had just mentioned, of this young 14-year-old. And everybody in that town knows about it, but they have done nothing.
You said a black man, Ralph?
Yes, I said. Yes, a black man was involved in this killing and has said nothing. We know about this, and we have this throughout the black community. Things that happen, and we have been so terrorized over the years that we do nothing. Now, can you imagine what must be going through the minds of the people in that community, the level of terror that this man who was involved in this killing is too frightened to say anything. He was so frightened that he was involved in this killing in this community that is so fearful today, not then, right now, that no one is speaking out. So you see that when Tom thought we have been bamboozled, or when Malcolm X says we've been bamboozled, we've been lied to and we believe it. We've been terrorized. But I'm going to have to go on. And Lynn, hang in there, because, you know, we're in the 30th anniversary of Larry Davis, you know, a man who understood self-defense. And don't get me started, because then there'll be no time for Joel to, you know, to give us his thought. But
well,
we must remember
the real anniversary, Ralph, is not till November. That was the frosty night when 26 policemen came to kill Larry, and instead they ran for their lives. So we can build up to this. I hope if Malachi is on your line, I hope maybe you'll get him on for at least a few words, because he is going to do a story for the Amsterdam News. But we have time to worry about Larry. And
thank you. We don't have time to work on self-defense. Joel, are you there? Hello, Joel.
Yes,
Joel.
Hello? Yes, hello?
Hello, Joel. Tell us what your thoughts
yes.
are for this evening.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you
hello?
Loud and clear.
Oh, okay. I'm listening to everything that's going on the show, and it's just overwhelming, the unbelievable brutality and tyrannical mindset of this country, and the biases, the racism, and everything else. It's just it's almost unimaginable, and yet this is the reality that we're all immersed in. And the consciousness about these things, like you listen to all these debates on the TV, none of these things are ever mentioned. It's all about how to become even more aggressively imperialist around the world. It's all about how to scapegoat this group or that group, and to continue with the system that is destroying the world, and will continue to do so until it's overthrown and replaced by a system that centers on human need rather than private profit. I know it's a cliche, say that, sort of worn out, but it has the meaning that people on this show reflect on all the time, but if only a larger number of people could do that, could break out of their ignorance, but not just the ignorance, but the corruption, the thing about keeping America top banana so that we can rob the rest of the world and bring the wealth here and then give people some of the crumbs of that just enough so that they don't rebel, so that they don't want to know. They don't want to, because they want to rationalize going along and getting along. And, of course, this is all combined with the fact that one individual alone, looking at the entire system, they feel that nothing could be done and therefore don't even try, don't even think about it because it's depressing. But the remedy to that is that people have to get organized, because organized people can are the real force. The problem is that we, the regular people, the common people, allow our leaders and oppressors and enemies organize us. And we can see what our strength is, because all of the strength that they say that they have is based on our complicity. Everything that gets built, every bullet that gets built, every gun that gets built, every bullet that's fired is usually fired by somebody who is organized by them, by this tiny minority of millionaires and billionaires, against the rest of us who in different layers, different degrees, are corrupt enough to do it for them, even though what we're really doing is killing our own mothers if the price is right. If you look at it look at that word, our mothers, in the broad sense of the term, not just your individual parents, but the working people and the oppressed people that give us our sustenance and everything else. Now, I wanted to focus on something that was a more local type issue, but which illustrates the collective shamelessness of all these Democrats, and especially the Democrats in New York City, because that's the bulk of the politicianry here. And that is that they just voted to raise their pay to $148,000. $10,000 more than their own commission had recommended. And they did this just in one day. They didn't say that this was going to be, this is a $36,000 raise. Their raise is more than the bulk of the people, earn in a year. And, you know, usually there's supposed to be a little ethical nicety that when they vote to raise the pay of the city council, it's supposed to be of the next council incoming. But in this case, not only did they raise it for themselves, but they raised it retroactively to the beginning of the year, adding tens of thousands of dollars each, depending on how many committees they were in charge of and so on. And what do they do for the people besides the small part of the robbery, which are these salaries? Somebody could say, well, $148,000. $500 times 50 council members, it is peanuts compared to what, say, the former mayor, Bloomberg, who was a billionaire when he became mayor, but only about $4 to $6 billion, depending on which estimate you go by. And after finishing three terms as mayor, he turns out now to have $32 billion. While pretending to have renounced his salary, he said, look, since I'm so rich, I don't really need that salary. I'll just take a dollar per year. But with his other hand, He managed to take tens of billions of dollars, and we don't even really know the extent of it. We know what's reported in their own media, especially media, the business media, which is largely owned by Bloomberg Media. That's where a lot of his wealth is centered. So he owns the media, tells the news about it. But here we have the city council, almost all Democrats. And not only did they vote to do this, but most of the watchdog do-gooder think tanks said that they thought it was a good idea, but that it should have been kept to only the instead of the $36,000 that they took, they should have stuck to the $26,000 that their own commission recommended. And then there's the role of the mayor. The mayor went along with this completely because he had been bought out by real estate interests that wanted to get rid of the horses in Central Park because the stable that they were kept in was something of an obstacle to gentrifying the neighborhood, and they wanted to get rid of the regular working class and middle class tenants and get rid of the horses as well. I imagine the horses will be treated better than a lot of the tenants, certainly better than the political prisoners that the entire fear to rebel against the system is really based on, just setting those examples again and again. You spoke out against the way in which you've been treated like a slave in one way or another. Well, here's what happens to you. This is what they send out. And it's all a question, again, of them being organized and we remaining in our individual selves and not realizing the immense power that we have if only we put it together in an organized way. So,
well, thank you for that, Joel. And these are specific examples of how we are manipulated. And there's a recent audit that finds corporate-owned condos receive more than $10 million in improper tax cuts. And so, you know, there's much to talk about, but I think the root of it is we have to organize people to understand these issues. I'm going to go to Betty right now. Go ahead, Joel.
Oh, yeah, I just wanted to tie it up by saying that the deal was that they were supposed to pass the bill to confine the horses to Central Park, and he would agree then to allow them the raise increase without any objection. As it was, the city council people reneged on the horses, and he was, but he still is going along with the increase. And this was somebody that a lot of people had high expectations of after the mayoralties of two terms for Giuliani and then three terms for Bloomberg. So a lot of people felt finally we're going to get relief. A Democrat is coming, and now we see that whatever relief we have doesn't really amount to much. And the Giulianis and even more the Bloombergs are because of their immense money. Giuliani obviously doesn't have as many billions as Bloomberg. They're still running the city in every dimension, and the Democrats are all these willing speakers. So anyway,
thank you, Joel. And I want to thank Brother Larry and Brother Tom, Sister Lynn, and Sister Ann for setting the tone tonight. The reality is, regardless of how duplicitous these two parties are, unless we make demands for our political prisoners, the death camps will keep on moving on. And this is why we have these discussions. Brother Larry Pinkney, I truly thank you for setting that wonderful tone for the co-host panelist discussion this evening. And on that note, we're going to say and see you next Tuesday. And this is what's happening. And the theme is political acts are not always necessarily done by political people. That's why it's our job, as Joel said, to organize. Thank you, panelists, and good night, Larry. Good night, Lynn. Good night, Tom. Good night, Joel. Good night, Brother Ralph.
Good night. Love you all.